Yes. Welcome to the 11th Annual International Radiance Workshop. This is a program for the day, the seminar. And we will start with Gregory J. Ward this morning to present applications of the RT Country program and the three-phase method for annual simulations. It was dark.
Yes, now. Throwing you into pitch blackness is a good warm up for RT Contrib, I guess. Yeah, it's a shame to shut out the sunshine now that we actually have some. But I guess that's the way it's going to be. Ah, snakes. Excellent. So thank you to Nicholas Roy for hosting us here and the School of Architecture for this lovely venue. I want to start off with an apology. This is not a good tutorial. I reviewed it and decided it was terrible, but I didn't have time to improve upon it. So I hope you'll help me by interjecting questions like, excuse me, what are you talking about? That sort of thing would be very helpful along the way, and I'll try to, with words, explain the things that are not well explained in the slides. So the basic idea with RT Contrib program is to collect the information that's normally thrown away during a ray tracing process. So this includes information about where light comes from in a rendering. Normally you follow rays backwards into the environment, it collects light from sources and indirect bounces and so on, and then you want to later on figure out where they came from in order to do something more with it. So more generally, you want to be able to record the flux transfer between a point and any other point. And it's really more of an accounting problem than anything else. Radiance does this anyway. So RT Contrib is merely a mechanism for recording the information that would otherwise be discarded. So as a quick example, you have this nice rendering of an interior space, but we don't know where the light came from. If we wanted to turn on and off different banks of light or different individual luminaires or dim them down, it'd be very convenient to know which luminaires contributed which quantities so that you could do that as a post-process. And that's the essential idea behind RT Contrib. So a little bit of background. The core rendering routines are a recursive evaluation of light, or of radiance, and that's where the name came from, and potentially useful information is lost about where the light originates. So prior to radiance version 3.7, there were only two solutions. One was to repeat the calculation for every light source and get your components that way, and that tended to be inefficient, especially in the context of multiple interreflections. And the other option is to use DaySim, which was geared to do daylight coefficients, but not, you know, the general problem. So just quickly run through an example. You start with a ray sent from the eye. This could be an R trace or could be a single pixel in R picked. These are the R trace options that tell you what the actual contribution of that ray is. It has to be 1.0 at the outset because, you know, all of it's going back to the measurement point. And then let's say it struck a surface who had a diffuse component of 1/4 and a specular component of 3%. Some of that would be contributed by a direct view of the light source. In this case, it would be 25% of the size of that light source would be the coefficient associated with that ray, and the actual contribution would be that coefficient times the source value. So source gets multiplied by this, that solid angle is some amount depending on the size of the source, and then that's the actual contribution value going back to the eye. Now there are other contributions as well. For example, you can have a specular ray. There's 3% of the weight that's sent over to this other surface, which has a 40% diffuse reflectance. And so that gets then traced back to the light source also, so you get that 3% times the 40% times the solid angle of the light source as seen from this point. So that gets multiplied, you know, essentially you've got all these things multiplying together in the ray tree. And that's the essential idea. You don't need to understand it exactly, but the concept is that you want to figure out what portion of each contributor in the scene, light source or what have you, ends up back at the measurement point. Is that pretty clear to everyone? What's going on there? Okay. So the trouble with this is that you can easily see how, you know, simple ray trees, direct light sources only, like the one I just showed you, aren't too bad. But as soon as you include diffuse interreflections, it becomes somewhat difficult to track. So that's where you really need a separate program to handle all of these contributions and add them up appropriately. So the central concept behind RT-contrib is that the rays you're interested in are fed as input, just as you would feed rays to an R-trace command. These could be view rays for an image, they could be illuminance points, they could be luminance measurements, what have you. And then the output is determined by catch surfaces. So the input is just like R-trace, but then the output has to be somehow captured, and you have to tell RT-contrib which rays you're interested in capturing. And you do this through two means. One is to identify modifier names that correspond to surfaces in the scene that you are interested in the light capture on. Usually they're light sources. They could be glow surfaces. They could be window surfaces. They can essentially be anything. And then the other method is through bin expressions. And a bin expression is just one of the CAL expressions that tells how to subdivide a surface. So say you've got a window surface and you're interested in which direction the ray hit the window in. You would define an expression that turned the ray direction as it impinged on the window into a bin number. So for example, in the Clem's division we'll talk about later, you have a certain basis function which is a binning of the incoming directions or the outgoing directions on a surface, and you would turn those directions into bins. So you'd have the modifier for the window and then the bin for the Clem's direction. So that part, the catch surfaces, that's what's new, and it can be a little bit tricky. And that's both the power and the challenge in using RT-contrib is understanding how to handle that part. So RT-contrib gathers rays, either contributions or coefficients, and then sums them up. So the difference between a contribution and a coefficient, again, a coefficient tells you the modification to the contribution as it travels through space. So each time you hit a surface, you might lose some of the contribution and because due to absorption and scattering and so forth. The coefficient is what gets multiplied by the final source value, for example. So going back to the earlier example, here we're tracing coefficients. These are all coefficients. It doesn't tell you what the final contribution is. For that, you have to multiply by the radiance of the source. So that's the only difference, is that the contribution has a final multiplication by the value of the source or whatever is providing light. And the reason you would want to use that sometimes and not other times is if you cared, for example, how this source sent out light as a function of angle, if it were a luminaire or something like that, and you're trying to figure out what actual contribution was made by that luminaire, you'd have to take into account the distribution, and then you'd have to use that value. Otherwise, the coefficient is usually adequate because you can always substitute a different value later. Right. So different applications require different types of sums, daylight coefficients, might sum at sky patches. Luminaire model may sum at the lamp surface, and again, you might want the contribution in that case if it's angular, has an angular distribution. And RT-contrib essentially just provides a general mechanism for doing this. In the current version of RT-contrib, R-trace is called to handle the actual ray tracing. And the new program, which I'll talk about in a bit, that's been subsumed in the body of the program. So the general operation is that it looks like an R-trace command with similar options, but then you also have to tell it where to collect the values, as I mentioned. So you have to specify at least one modifier name, and then optionally you can specify bin numbers based on ray direction and intersection point. And then the output can be sent to one or more files or commands, whose names, like the names of the files, are specified or can be specified by the modifier name and bin number. Or you can send it all to the same place if you have some way of dealing with that. So that's the problem with this tutorial. It's a very mechanical, low-level tutorial. It's not really covering the high-level stuff, which will probably happen in David's talk following mine. So it's a little out of order, and I apologize for that. So diving straight into an example, and it's probably easier to learn by example than it is by the concepts. Here we have an RT-contrib command that's being fed by VW Rays. So VW Rays, if you're not familiar, is simply a program that takes an input view and converts it to a set of eye rays, or primary rays sent from the eye. So they get piped into RT-contrib as the rays to be sampled. This is telling it to compute contributions rather than coefficients. So we want the contributed values from two different light sources. One is going to have the modifier fluor1, and the other is going to have the modifier fluor2. And then the output file, which has to appear before the dash m's, again, details, has in its specification this percent s. And so the percent s gets replaced in one case by fluor1 and in the other case by fluor2. So that's how you get two output files out of the same command. And then this back-quoted execution of VW Rays simply says the resolution. This dash FFC says that that you're going to take input floats and output color values, and then you just give the octree. And the result is two pictures, one which shows the contribution from the first fluorescent, and the other which shows the contribution from the second fluorescent fixture. These are two fluorescent fixtures mounted in the ceiling. And then you can use that to simulate what it's like to have bad fluorescent startup, just as a silly example. So quickly going over some of the options to RT-contrib, you can specify a number of R-trace processes you want it to run. You can specify that you want to recover from an earlier failed command or killed command. The dash E expressions and dash F sources are for compiling definition files. These are for the bin numbers. And then you have this output specification, which I showed just a minute ago. And the bin number is an expression that will subdivide your sources. And then the modifier specification can either be a name or multiple names on multiple dash m's, or a dash uppercase m, which is a list from a file. And this is handy because sometimes you have quite a few modifiers you're trying to track. So these expressions are needed by the dash b option. Your output specification can have exclamation points if you're outputting to a command. And then the percent s I mentioned is for the modifier name. Percent d is a way to separate the bin numbers. And the bin number should be evaluated to an integer or zero if you want to disable it. So going back to the example, I'm just going to go over this real quick again. VW Rays is the command used to generate the view. And a second invocation just spits out the view dimensions. And then the dash O and dash M options specify the output files and the modifiers we're interested in. And the -ffc tells it to expect single precision floats, which are specified with this -ff, and output RGBE colors, which are used to create an image. So skipping straight to a more complicated example, this is actually a more typical example where we're interested in daylight coefficients. Here's the Tregenza subdivision of the sky into patches, and these are the renderings associated with each sky patch. We've added a zero patch that corresponds to the ground, a uniform ground, and then here's just the correspondences between the first whatever 11 coefficients, so drawn a little line between the coefficients and the images that those correspond to in the RT-contrib run. And so we can put discrete solar positions in each of those Tregenza patches together with a sky distribution, and we are choosing the four nearest suns for interpolation, and this is the final result, where we get some weird kind of shadows from those four suns, and then the illumination. And this is very quick to compute, because once you've run RT-contrib, then it's just a matter of summing together the results. So moving to an example where we have a captured sky, we can take a computer model. This is a model that was created by Paul Dvevek and his friends at the USC Institute for Creative Technologies from hundreds of light sight laser scans. And then they captured a sky. This is work done by Jesse Stumpel. They captured a sky on the only cloudy day in LA. And then we used RT-contrib plus PCOM for 690 animated frames. It took 6 hours to run. So this is just taking those captured skies throughout the day and showing what the Parthenon looks like under those skies. So essentially, this is one RT-contrib run followed by, whatever I said, 600 of the PCOM summations. So it's kind of fun. So one thing you'll notice in this, I don't know how well it shows up, but there's some noise in here, and that's because RT-contrib requires that you run R-trace in a fully Monte Carlo fashion, which I'll talk about in a minute. So the way this was done is we render RT-contrib to get the DC contribution as a partial image for each of those Tregenza sky patches. And this takes a single Monte Carlo rendering. And then we use a low-resolution version of the captured sky to compute those Tregenza patch radiances and then apply PCOM to generate each image. So this is patch one, which is near the horizon in the Tregenza distribution. Again, you can see the noise result that's a result of the Monte Carlo calculation. So we'd be summing together 146 of these, basically, to get the final frame for each image. And the coefficients for the sky is computed using, this is the RT-contrib command that generated those 146 individual component images. So VW arrays was used to compute this view file. Essentially, it's the view rays that are being used. There's the resolution of the image. This is again saying that we're outputting a color image. And then you have the options for the Monte Carlo calculation, and the T-bin is telling how to bin the results for the sky, and then it outputs 146 images, which are the component images, and white, I think, is just the modifier that I gave to the sky, and this is how many processes I told it to run. And then for each time frame, we run mix sky, and this is just a precursor to the gen skyvec command, which breaks the sky into Tregenza patches and computes the values and then uses PCOM to sum them all together. And now we would use Gen SkyVec for this, and we'd use DC time step for the final command, because that PCOM command expands out into this, which is not terribly efficient. Those are all the patch values for the different sky components, and so it's 146 of these sky components that have to be added together. So now we just do it with one DC time step command, which is a lot more efficient in that calculation. So the tools are gradually coming together to make this easier, but there's still like a lot of pieces and parts. And this is, I wanted to show this other example where instead of tracing rays backwards as we normally do, we've traced rays forwards from the sun. And in RTContrib, it doesn't really matter which direction you go. It's just in some cases one is easier than the other. So we wanted to see what the light patterns on the bottom of a pool were like. And it's easier in this particular case to send rays from the sun. And then we accumulate the rays on 5 submerged pool surfaces. So this is the actual command. We're again generating a view. This is a parallel view in this case. We're sending it to RTContrib, and then we're capturing the light that arrives on these different surfaces. So we have different bin grids for each material, which corresponds to each pool surface in that scene. So the dash C0 says to accumulate ray contributions rather than computing a quick sum. And then you have this coords cal, which is shown here. It's shown here as just breaking the underground surfaces into XY grids. So you have different variables corresponding to the different surfaces. And these are the color picks that get written to. So these are the results of the calculation. Now we're going to use that for a final rendering. And that shows the rendering of one of those pool surfaces, essentially rendering it as a glow in the final result. So this is an example of forwards ray tracing. And other examples might include light pipes and more interesting things like that. And we hope at some point to extend GenBSDF into a more general tool or have another tool that will handle those types of situations. So some notes on the care and feeding of RTContrib. If you use the dash B option to specify a bin number, also use dash BN to say how many bins there are. This used to be optional, now it's required in the RContrib replacement. You have to be careful about where you place the dash M options because they have to appear after the file specifications and things like that. Unlike most radius commands where all that matters about order is that later options override earlier ones. In the case of RTContrib, the placement of these dash M options determine when earlier options are actually used. So since dash M uses whatever dash O appeared most immediately before, it matters where you place these things. Oh, this is actually outdated. I should correct my slide. This is where dropping into the editor is very handy. It's not dash C anymore. It's, what is it? Dash B. That's funny because it was originally called dash C, but now it's dash uppercase V or V plus, I think. And contributions are always triplet values. I get this wrong so many times, it's not even funny. I always think that I think in terms of gray, and so I'm just going to get one value out, but no, you get three, and if you write an rcalc command that forgets that, it's just a disaster, and you won't find out till later. Oh, I see. Okay, never mind. And then options have to be appropriate to pure Monte Carlo. So what does that mean? Pure Monte Carlo means that you can't have any ambient cache. And you have to use uncorrelated sampling. I think these are all the defaults that are set by rtconfig anyway. And it's good to have Russian roulette termination and other recommended settings. And in fact, I think that's an enforced setting. You can't have super samples. It's a good idea to set the direct threshold to zero, turn up the direct jittering and the specular jittering, and so on. And then the dash LW setting takes on a very important meaning, which is that it determines when ray trees are terminated. And the more paths you have, the smaller this setting should be. So if you've set AD to 100, say, you should make sure that LW is less than 1/100th, or else you're going to truncate those rays sooner than you thought. So, yes, we have no indirect cache. And the reason is that rtconfig needs to know where every contribution ultimately came from, and the cache is interfering with that accounting. So we can't have that happen. Dsym actually does have an ambient cache and avoids this issue by storing all its coefficients in the ambient value list, which works okay if you have a limited number of coefficients, but rtconfig is designed to be a general program, and we don't know how many we're going to need. So this is funny. I wrote this saying it was more memory efficient, but at the time there were issues with rtconfig using a lot of memory in certain cases where you have very complex ray trees. It's now true. It wasn't true when I wrote this slide. So, multiprocessing rtconfig. So it's supported by the dash n option, and this has been greatly improved with the new rconfig replacement, which was going to be released in the next official release, or if you're running from the head, you have it now. It doesn't make any calls to rtrace. Instead, it does everything internally, and using the dash c option for averaging multiple rays also improves scalability because there's less communication required between the parent and child processes. So there is an issue with the number of open files. Since rtconfig and rconfig can produce a lot of output files, depending on how many bins and everything you've divided things into, you can run into the limit on the number of open files on the system. So there are different and not very well standardized means to increase those limits, using ulimit or limit descriptors. You kind of have to... It depends on the shell you're using, it depends on the system you're on, it depends on how that system was configured. It's unfortunately, you know, deep in the bowels of the system where these things get set in some cases, and it can be a pain. Another thing that Axel Jacobs has found is that it's a good idea to use a RAM disk if you have access to one, or there are ways to create a RAM disk, and that will also speed up file I.O. So there are some recovery options. If your command dies midway or your computer dies midway, you can, in some cases, use the dash R option to pick up where you left off. It's also useful to use the dash CO option. That combined with the dash R option allows you to accumulate rays in a sort of incremental fashion, which is great for progressive calculations. If you want to just run some rays over a period of hours and then see how far you got, that's a good way to do that. So that's it for the crash course intro. I have more. Let me just fix that other one. So this is going to be more along the lines of what most of you would use RTContrib for, which is complex fenestration. And I'm going to give a little history, and this will be a nice introduction to David's talk, which follows mine after the break. So in this overview, or in this talk, I'm going to talk about the history of complex fenestration really briefly, and then how Window 6 produces input for, say, make-a-loom and using GenVSDF to compute the same thing that Window 6 would give you. And then I'll place an emphasis on the three-phase daylight coefficient method for annual simulations and talk briefly about some new developments in that direction. So the history of complex fenestration and radiance is that there's this illume concept which specifies secondary sources of illumination in a scene. And the make-a-loom program has been around since 91 when I developed it during a sabbatical at UPFL in Switzerland. And this program turns complex fenestration systems into proxy surfaces or proxy light sources, the secondary light sources I mentioned, to illuminate the interior in a more uniform fashion. However, it fails for sunlight, direct light on curved specular systems. So there are certain failure cases where make-a-loom can't really handle the problem. So an example is we might have this complex fenestration system, which I've illustrated as a set of Venetian blinds, and then I'll define these red proxy surfaces that intervene between the complex geometry and the room, and this is what gets turned into an illum by the make-a-loom command. So the make-a-loom command computes an output distribution for that and treats it as a secondary light source. The indirect rays will just see that secondary light source, so they sort of get a smooth, uniform view of the window, whereas direct eye rays will actually see the complex fenestration, so you'll see the Venetian blinds, and that's similar the way direct light itself is handled too. So direct light can pass through the Venetian blinds and create the expected kinds of patterns. However, if you have something like a curved specular surface, you've got the sun here that you're trying to sample, you have a random sample ray coming in here, your chances of actually intersecting the sun, which is a very important contributor of illumination, is about 100,000 to 1. So you can imagine you have to send a lot of samples to get a decent integration of that. And that's why it doesn't work very well. So an alternative is to use the Window 6 program, also from LBL, to produce a bidirectional transmission distribution function for make-a-loom. And LBL and L defined a format for that data, which using the CLEMS basis function has 145 input sample directions and 145 output directions as a matrix that make-a-loom uses to essentially do the light transfer through the window. It still computes an interior illumin distribution, but now, because everything's been binned for it, it can find, you know, and include the sun in the appropriate place. This overcomes some of the limitations with specular systems. However, if you think about it, 145 directions over the hemisphere is not that many, and the resolution is, especially towards the horizon, about 15 degrees or larger, which is pretty crude. This gives an example of part of one of these XML files. It has a bunch of nice metadata information, then it actually has the matrix distribution data below it, which looks like this, the scattering data. So you never really need to read or edit this file, although we often do. Like so many things, it's like never expected humans to have to deal with it, but we often do. So just doing a quick comparison, here we have a radiance reference rendering. This is done without any make-a-loom or other interventions. This is using make-a-loom, using just strictly from the geometry, and this is using make-a-loom based on BTDF for this Venetian blind system out of Window 6. And you can see they're pretty similar. They're not identical, but they're pretty close. The first rendering has perhaps a little more noise in the back. The third rendering has very slight differences in the illumination, especially on the ceiling up here. And that's probably due to that angular accuracy I mentioned. Another way to get at this data is to use the GenBSDF command, which calls rtcontrib to compute compute the BTDF or BRDFs for a complex system. And it assembles a result into the same XML format that Windows 6 uses. The output is usable in Windows 6 also. And it can include a materials and geometry format description of the complex fenestration system geometry. And that allows you to do renderings directly of the geometry in your final output. So here we have an example where we've got this light redirecting system. And this is the output that GenBSDF computes for normal incidence. So we're illuminating via Clem's patch 1. And then this shows the light being scattered vertically mostly in the output directions. This is a visualization that Andy McNeil produced. And here we're illuminating patch 26, and we see that the output, and this is reversed. You have to kind of fold these together. So this is an input from one side, and this is output going out the other side. And here we have an example of what the MGF format looks like. Here we're embedding it in the XML of the window file, Windows 6 file. The XML is interpolated with this MGF data. And MGF supports transformed arrays. So this is actually an array of Venetian blinds. So it's a pretty simple, clean format. I actually developed this format to describe luminaire geometries, but it was never used by the IES because they could never agree on anything. So here we have some example results. This is without any fenestration geometry. And you can see the sunlight just comes in as a blob. This is using the blinds geometry from that MGF description. So we get a better rendering that way. Nicer light patch. I mean, it's still quite noisy because the blinds aren't quite resolved in this level of detail. You can see it a little bit, but if we had some different rendering parameters or probably thicker blinds, you'd see it more clearly. So the other advantage of using a BSDF file is you can use it, you can apply it in an annual simulation context. So Makealum has, you know, is nice as far as it goes, but computing 2,000 or so renderings with Makealum would be very tedious, to say the least. So we'd like to have something faster, and the question is, can we use the daylight coefficients with the BTDF data? And the answer, obviously, is yes, or we wouldn't be talking about it. So this introduces the three-phase method, where the first phase is to compute the light transfer from the sky patches to the window exteriors. The second phase is to compute the light transfer from the window interiors to the measurement points, whether these are pixels in a view or luminance values or whatever you specify via that R-trace-like input. And then the phase three is the time step calculation where you put these things together. So you combine a sky vector for a particular weather condition, time and day, with the exterior matrix you computed in phase one. You multiply that by the BTDF, which it's either measured or calculated with GenBSDF, and then finally by the interior matrix or the view matrix computed in phase two. And this will tell you what the actual measurement values are. This is what it looks like all written out. So I is the desired result vector. V is the view matrix corresponding to that interior calculation. T is the transfer matrix corresponding to the BTDF out of Windows 6 or out of GenBSDF. D is the daylight coefficient matrix, which tells how light got from the sky to the window. And then S is the sky vector that's generally computed by GenSkyVec or something similar. So the sky vector is sitting out here on the end of the matrix equation. That gets multiplied through the daylight coefficient matrix, which then gets multiplied through by the transmission matrix. And then you have the view matrix sitting here, and that produces your sensor vector. So it's actually fairly simple math, just a lot of numbers that you have to track. So with this kind of generality comes some challenges. ArchiContrib is used both in characterizing exterior matrix D in phase one and the interior D matrix in phase two. However, it wasn't really designed specifically to do either of those things. So we're sort of leveraging the generality of ArchiContrib to get these contributions, but you have to do some scripting or write some make files, or it's essentially work to get this all to happen. And it's still very manual at this stage, unfortunately. So stepping through it in phase one, we'll take those sky patches and relate them to incident directions on the window. And we need a separate calculation for each window orientation and each, if you have exterior obstructions or changes in geometry, you need to also take those into consideration in how you break up your window. The GenClemSamp utility generates samples over a given window group. So this is one of these little utilities that it's actually a Perl script that computes the rays that you need to send to ArchiContrib in order to get this D matrix to be computed. But it's still a somewhat manual process. So here's an example. You'll pass the output of GenClemSamp, giving it a certain view and a number of samples per direction to ArchiContrib. And then it uses the Reinhardt sky in this case to produce a particular daylight matrix for the south group of windows. So if you had a west group and an east group, they'd be separate ArchiContrib commands with different GenClemSamp options and different materials, most likely. So in this case, we're specifying the group orientation by a view vector, and the number of samples per direction has to match. And then the window description uses a subset of the octree, or can use a subset of the octree to actually specify that window group. You don't need the entire one. You really just need the exterior. And as I said, we use the Reinhardt subdivision of the trig end of the sky because in many cases, 145 directions is not enough to really get the resolution that you want on, especially direct solar. Direct solar is included in this calculation, which is something of a problem in some cases. And as I said, different window orientations require different runs of ArchiContrib. So here we have an example space. Just considering this one window, we're going to compute the contributions of light from the sky to that window exterior. And this is a view from a point in the center of that window of the sky. And we've divided the sky patches using random colors into the Trigenza patches. So this is what you'll see looking through the CLEMS angular sampling grid. And it's easy to confuse the Trigenza and the CLEMS grids because they're almost the same. The divisions are slightly different, but it's got the same altitude, azimuth, kind of row, column nature. But for a particular patch, a particular CLEMS patch direction, say here, we'll actually see multiple Trigenza sky patches contributing. And then down here you might say, oh, there's no contribution at all. But in fact, you're getting an indirect contribution. You're seeing a bit of the ground plane or whatever, reflecting all of these different patch contributions. So it appears gray simply because it's integrated all these colors in this particular rendering. But the whole point of the exterior sampling is you're figuring out how light arrived to the window, whatever paths it might have taken. And this is just showing an animation of the same thing. We're running through the sky patches and showing how the light is actually affecting these different receiving patches. So here you can see the indirect effects and how they vary with different sky contributions. Unfortunately, the numbering of this is all wrong. This is actually the Tregenza superimposed instead of the Clem's, because it was more convenient for me, but it's wrong. Just an illustration. So that was phase one. That computed the D matrix. In phase two, we need to compute this V or view matrix, which relates the center the sensor locations to the exiting window directions on the interior of the space. The nice thing about this is that you can, in one RT contrib run, you can compute all the contributions that you care about. And you use a similar Clem's subdivision because the BTDF just takes exterior Clem's and then maps it to interior Clem's. So this uses the Clem's underscore int cal file to make that interior subdivision. And this is an example where we're computing images. So again, we use the VWray command. We pipe it into rtcontrib, same as before. And then we have multiple output bins and windows. We use both %d and %s and the %d specifications in our output file spec. And then the %d will get replaced by the bin number, and the %s will be replaced by the window group name. So again, one calculation will compute, in most cases, hundreds of these output files. So a good question is, what is a reasonable set of rendering parameters? This is very different than running rpict, so it's good to have some rules of thumb to work with on rendering parameters. This is the set of rendering parameters I use for this particular scene. I sent out 2,000 indirect samples, and so I have to use a weighting factor that's less than 1/2,000th. So I used 0.0002, so have other options. So there's something you kind of should play with on your own, because I don't even have that much experience to tell you what the right options are. The windows can be sources, they don't have to be. In some cases it makes sense to attract source direct rays by making the windows into light sources. In other cases, it doesn't really help. If the windows are a certain size, it doesn't really matter that much. In fact, it's sometimes better not to treat them as sources. And this is something that Andy experimented with, but I don't think we reached any clear conclusions on recommendations. Again, there's no indirect caching. And as I said, one RT contrib run computes everything. Yeah?
The limit weight, shouldn't it be 1/AB to the power of AB?
No, not really. Not unless you want to completely saturate your calculation, which is very expensive. What will happen, it's a good question, what will happen in this case is you'll send out those 2,000 initial rays, but then each of those will only generate a couple of rays in deeper levels. So it becomes more like a Monte Carlo path tracing instead of a fully populated recursive tree, because if you did it like you suggested, 1/2,000 to the fourth power, then that would be millions and millions of rays for each initial sample, and you wouldn't actually improve your accuracy that much. So that's kind of why I came up with the rule of thumb, is that it's used this independent. But again, your mileage may vary. It's something to experiment with and see how much. I mean, Andy had this experience of really running out of memory and time by cranking up these parameters. This is something that's much better in the rcontrib program than it was in rtcontrib, but still it's going to be expensive if you lower the LW too much. So this is illustrating the output of that calculation. So for a particular window group, I'm just illustrating how the light comes in through the window. And this has been idealized. You don't actually get this clear subdivision of patches because there's a lot of scattering and overlap and so on, but it's set the parameters for you, just for illustration purposes. And so the idea is for each outgoing direction, you have contributions to a view. And this is a picture that we're rendering, not patches on the wall. And this animation just steps through the different clems, patch directions for that particular window. So these are the individual images that are generated by that rt-contrib command for a particular group. So there are 145 directions for this group, and then there are something like 6 or 7 groups. So it's, you know, about 1,000 or so output images. And then those get summed together using the DC time step command in phase 3. So phase 3 takes a sky vector that's created by Jen Skyvec, and then DC time step utility to multiply together the images. So it does this VTDS multiplication for you, where V is the view matrix, T is the VTDF, D is the daylight matrix, and S is the sky vector created by Jen Skyvec. I is then your final result vector, which in this case we arrange into pixels of an image. So here's an example of that calculation. We use GenSky to generate a particular sky, which we pass the GenSkyVec, which creates this sky vector. And then we use PCOM to combine the different window groups, each window group being computed by a DC time step command, where you're giving it the particular BTDF file that you want, the daylight matrix for that window group, the sky vector, and then you're passing it, you're using it to sum together this collection of images that correspond to the 145 clems directions for that window. And then you have multiple of these, that's why there's the PGOM command, because you have to add up the south window group with the west group, with the north group, with the east group, and put them all together in one output file. So it's summing together 1,000 plus images in this command to get your output. So here I'm generating sky for noon, the autumn equinox, and I'm using DC time step for each group, like I said, and the total time to run each of these is about 4 or 5 seconds. Depends on the speed of your hard disk more than anything. And this is just showing an animated result at different times of day on the equinox where I'm doing all these summations. So 4 or 5 seconds per time step, doesn't take long to run a day. You can imagine if you were running a full year of these, it would take a while. And the hope that this year is to develop an annual version of DC time step that will take an entire sky vector, a sky matrix for the entire year rather than a single vector. Speed that up more. So a few fire would beware things. Nearby interior and exterior geometry can affect the accuracy and require additional subdivisions in the phase one calculations for the D matrix. The sky resolution trades off runtime with solar shading accuracy. So if you use the Reinhardt subdivision of the Tregenza sky, you can play with how many subdivisions to use. And that will affect those things. And then exterior and interior reflections from windows are not really associated with the BSDFs. So ideally, if you substitute a different BSDF, it then would change the amount of light that's reflected in the interior and maybe even exterior if you have multiple reflections from the nearby surface. But it's not, because that's all baked in, effectively. So the only thing that gets separated out is the transmitted component. So this, in most cases, doesn't affect accuracy very much, but in particularly unusual corner cases, it can. It's just something to be aware of. So new developments going on. Until now, you could only have BTDF for the make-illume calculation, which neglected interior window reflections, and for the annual simulation. But in the last version of Radiance, the current version of Radiance, you can support the BSDF data directly. And I think hopefully we'll hear some more talks about how successful that is. And we also have the variable resolution specification for BSDS, which allows much better than 15-degree accuracy on the incoming and outgoing directions. And this is showing an example rendering using that technique. So here we've computed the transmission matrix and reflection matrix for this woven shear curtain. We've computed it for this surface. These other surfaces are measured values that were used in a variable resolution representation, and it just shows you that it's all kind of sort of working at this point. There's still a few bugs we're working on, though, that's, to be honest. So that's it. Thank you very much. So we have a few minutes if you want to ask questions. It is a coffee break, and probably people are ready for that. Anyone want to ask anything, or is you just waking up still?
Greg, in the first tutorial you went through, they were generating some caustics, and you were forward.
Yes.
Tracing.
Yes.
Where did you define the water surface?
That the was defined surface. In the... we have a picture of water. That was defined in the forward ray tracing part. So is
that in the tutorial? Or maybe I just missed it.
No, I didn't show that part. But we actually have a surface that uses, I think, Perlin noise function or something like that to get the waves on the water, which is a surface normal perturbation. And that's important in the forward ray tracing and also the final rendering to include that surface, because this is the thing that actually creates the interesting effects. Otherwise, there's nothing to see. Yeah, I don't think I included that. So I didn't. It's in this catch scene. It's also in the final rendered octree, but I didn't include all the files. They're actually, if they're not distributed with Radiance, I can easily send them to you if you're interested.
You said right now we don't have BRDS incorporated, we only have BTDS.
That's true for the three-phase method and also for the... it's funny, we're phasing out the version of Makelum that used BTDFs directly in favor of BSDFs defined as part of Radiance as a material because it does include everything. So... But for the three-phase method, this is true.
So you envision that at the end you would also have the middle stage would be the, or the last stage would be the BSDF instead of BSDF instead of the BDF that you have right now. Just that matrix would change.
Right. The thing is you can't really include it without creating a whole another branch of the problem. So... what you generally do is you specify in your model a surface whose average reflectance corresponds to the average reflectance of the system that you're using. So in the time step, you might be changing some aspect of the system, say the angle on Venetian blinds or something like that. And that affects the transmission more than the reflection, so you assume, you hope that the average reflectance is going to be close enough. And in any case, the internal reflections off of a window surface tend not to be the dominant factor relative to the transmission. It's a bit of hand waving. In particular cases, there might be a problem. But there's no easy solution in the three-phase method that I'm aware of.
Because at the end, it's only one matrix that you're using.
Yeah. I mean, the XML file that you hand it might actually have the information in it. But it's not in the matrix formulation. Yeah, so that's the problem. Good question. Anybody else? Yes, Santiago?
I seen a couple of years ago that interference between the pattern gradients used to generate a sampling rate the pattern in the sky patches, especially when the sky patches get refined. Is that still a problem, or could be still a problem?
You had that interesting talk where you had that interaction between the two sampling rates. I'm not sure. I mean, there were some issues initially with the way that GenClem's SAMP in particular was generating its samples, but I think it had to do with the way it was sampling the surfaces, not the directions. If you turn up the number of samples with the dash C option to GenClem SAMP, it should fully sample all the directions and they should overlap well enough with the sky patches. But to be honest, I'd probably have to review what you did and think about it some more to give you an intelligent response. So. Yeah. Anybody else? Well, thanks again, and I guess we have our break now.
Yeah.